if you think we're on the run.
Welcome to episode 17 of the Dad's Army podcast, and thank you for joining us. We've got quite a show lined up for you today. In addition to the normal news items we take a look at, we've got quite a significant amount of feedback from listeners, both on our featured episode, this podcast, which is branded at long last, I hear you say. Regular listeners will know that this has been delayed for at least a month or so now. We've also received some feedback on our Frank Williams interview and our new blog, which incidentally is still there for those of you who haven't seen it. There's loads of news items that we haven't had a chance to discuss on the podcast, some of which we have, some of which we haven't. There's some new polls, you can vote for your favourite character, and we've had a number of votes so far, and I'm actually quite surprised as to which character is leading. So make sure you head over to dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com, cast your vote for your favourite character, and make sure you catch up on all that's new in the world of Dad's Army. Good evening, Tony. How are things?
All's well, thanks, James. You okay?
Yes, not so bad. We've had a couple of emails asking us what featured episodes we're going to be discussing. And I mean, we plan these a couple of weeks, sometimes a little bit longer than
days.
That, in advance. Days in advance.
Yes.
You may plan days in advance. I plan months in advance on these. In a few moments, we've got our discussion about Branded, and we've received quite a few comments about Branded, so thanks to everyone who's contributed or sent in their thoughts on that episode. The next podcast, we have got The Enemy Within the Gates, and that's a season one episode. What comes to mind, Tony, when you think of The Enemy Within the Gates?
It was raining at the time.
It was.
Cambridge won.
Yes, you obviously remember Captain Vino Grudzki. He made an impression on you.
Can I do you now, sir? I'll stop there.
After that, we're going to have podcast 19, and that's going to feature Time on My Hands. And that, of course, is the last episode in Series 5, with Jones and a large clock.
Yes, not my favourite episode.
I'm not overly keen on that one either. Shortly after that, we'll have a discussion about the test, which is where the platoon take on the wardens at cricket. And shortly after that, we're into May now, we'll be bringing you a Bressingham special. And as you know, there's a Perry and Croft Day being held up at Bressingham Steam Museum, and we'll be bringing you interviews and discussions when we're actually there. So I'm really looking forward to that, Tone.
It's going to be really good.
If you have any comments or any thoughts on any of those episodes that you'd like us to read out, then please email them to us at warmingtononc333@yahoo.co.uk.
You're listening to the Dad's Army podcast with James and Tony.
Paul Carpenter from the Dad's Army Appreciation Society has kindly sent us an email following our last podcast, episode 16.
Yeah, thanks, Paul, for sending in your email. And there's a number of things that you've given us some additional information on. First of all, Paul mentions something about the episode titles and asked if we were aware that the episode titles were based on old films or songs. For example, When Did You Last See Your Money, Fallen Idol, High Finance, Sons of the Sea, to name but a few. Paul says that was an influence from Jimmy Perry. The ones that I was aware of was Asleep in the Deep. I knew that was a song at the time. And, of course, Don't Fence Me In is not only an episode title, but was also referred to in its context as a song in the episode Fallen Idol. I think it was requested of Mannerin by Fraser to play on his gramophone.
The one, When Did You Last See Your Money? I thought that was like from a famous painting, because there's a famous painting titled When Did You Last See Your Father?
Really?
So I don't know if that's, there's two answers for that one. Paul also kindly commented on the commentary that Perry and Croft did on the Battle of the Giants Christmas Specials DVD, and Paul's just helped clarify here that Perry and Croft weren't together when they did the commentary. I think James and I mentioned that we thought they were together. They did it separately. Paul also comments on the road safety film, another of the aspects of the Christmas specials. Regarding the road safety film, there were no pelican crossings at that time. It was a new concept, Green Man, etc., which is why they had to construct one for the safety film, and then remove it shortly afterwards. The location, Paul says, was Crockenham Well Road Centre in Reading.
And I think we were confused as to why they constructed one specifically for that scene. And I think we both expressed surprise that they just didn't use a current one. And of course, that answers our question very clearly. So thanks for the info on that, Paul. Lastly, regarding the Coward review, and Tony and I started off our discussion last time not knowing for definite who wrote the song featuring in the Coward review feature, and I have to eat humble pie and say Tony was correct. It was Noel Coward. Paul mentions that, like much of Coward's work, it displays skill at wordplay and evokes a feeling of both good humour and patriotic pride, and pokes fun at the disorder and shortages of equipment, supplies and effective leadership that the Home Guard experienced during the Second World War, which was very true, and at least we've now been put straight on that. So thanks ever so much, Paul, for getting in touch with us.
We've had some feedback on our webpage from Ian. He says, "What a great interview covering Frank Williams' career, talking about his role in the Army game as Captain Pocket and as the Bishop in You Rang the Lord. The affection Frank had for Dad's Army came through in the interview with James. Frank has had an outstanding career in the theatre, television and film, and is remembered by many people for his portrayal as the Vicar in Dad's Army, and the friendly style in which James conducted the interview made for a most enjoyable show. Well done yet again." That's a message from Ian. And yeah, James, I think it was a brilliant interview.
I mean, I have to be honest with you, I had very little to do with it. I mean, Frank made it so easy to interview him. I mentioned a few things, and he just came in with some fascinating anecdotes and stories. And I said it in the last podcast, and I'll say it again. It was a fantastic interview, and it was a really great experience interviewing Frank.
We've also got a message from Tony, and that's not me, this is someone else. He says, "Great interview with Frank Williams. I remember the Army game as a young whippersnapper. Also the Navy lark with John Pertwee, Bill's cousin, I believe, and the goons. Great stuff. Keep it up, guys."
Great. Thanks very much, Tony, for those comments. Very much appreciated.
Hello, this is Paul Carpenter from the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, and I've just interrupted James's podcast to just update some of you who may be coming to Bressingham for the 11th of May. I'll give you a list of guests we've invited. We're not going to say they'd all turn up, but it might give you an idea of the flavour of the Sunday. If they all turn up, it would be fantastic. So if I go through our growing list of people invited, we have John Clegg, inviting David Croft, Pam Condell, Donald Tulett, Jeffrey Holland, Michael Knowles, Keith Lavender, Eric Longworth, Philip Maddock, Jimmy Perry, Bill Pertwee, of course, Sue Pollard, if she can make it, she's on tour at the moment, Wendy Richard, Paul Shane, Harold Snow, the Web Twins, and good old Frank Williams. So that's a nice list. If they turn up, we're in for a hell of a day, Bressingham on the 11th of May. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast.
A couple of weeks ago, the Sunday Express ran a double-page spread on Dad's Army, being that it's the 40th anniversary this year. And they just come up with lots of pictures of the cast back then and today, and 40 facts about Dad's Army, just picking a few at random. Creator and co-writer Jimmy Perry was a teenage recruit in the Home Guard, just like Private Pike. He originally called the show The Fighting Tigers. So that Fighting Tigers was what Dad's Army was going to be called originally. At 72 when the series began, and 81 when it ended, Arnold Ridley was the oldest member of the cast. He'd fought in the First World War and was seriously wounded on the Somme, leaving his left arm virtually useless and giving him blackouts for the rest of his life. I'll just read one more from here. When the series began, Perry and Croft were paid £400 per script. Initially, John Le Mesurier earned more than Arthur Lowe, pocketing £262 per episode, compared to Lowe's £210 per episode. But eventually, Lowe became the highest earner. Other wages in the first series included £210 for Clive Dunn, £105 for John Laurie, £78 for Jimmy Beck, and £63 for Arnold Ridley.
Leslie Grantham was given a radio interview to BBC Coventry and Warwickshire. This was a couple of weeks ago now, when the stage play was in Coventry at the Belgrade Theatre. The interview's quite interesting. Grantham talks a little bit about his past career, but he does concentrate primarily on Dad's Army. He talks about how he was cast as Private Walker. You can listen to the interview, lasts about 5 minutes or so, by going to our blog, which is www.dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com. scrolling down a little bit, and you'll be able to just click on a small link that will open up Real Player and play you the interview. Indeed, most of the items we talk about on the podcast appear on our blog as well, and there are some that we don't actually have an opportunity to talk about on the podcast, so it's worth taking a look. There are some polls on there as well, so you can vote for your favourite character, and there's a couple of other things that you can vote for as well, all Dad's Army related. That's www.dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast with James and Tony.
James and I went to see the Dad's Army stage play again, the third time for me. We saw it in Poole. The theatre had its own little cafe restaurant, which was really good. And as we walked in, we saw quite a few members of the cast sitting down having their own lunch. We saw Leslie Grantham playing Walker. We saw David Warwick. And I bumped into Brian Jackson in the queue for ordering the food. I wanted to say to him, good luck for the play tonight, but I thought I'd leave him alone and let him get on with it. Anyway, we went into the play, and it's the usual four episodes. I would say better than ever. Probably the third time seeing it was the best time for me. All four episodes, I think, were done very well indeed. At one point during the play, when all the main characters were on the stage, I actually looked at them and thought they could have all been the original cast members. They were all easily recognisable, and they were all acting their parts very well. Timothy Keightley is obviously the man of interest, or man of most interest at the moment, simply because he's the newest member of the cast and probably the most important one, and his acting was superb. I think, although I should let James speak for himself, I think we both felt that he was putting quite a lot of effort into his acting, possibly verging on overacting, but it didn't spoil it at all, and I think the effort that he was putting in was appreciated and came off very well. I also think there's a little bit more audience reaction when we saw it most recently, because on previous occasions the cast didn't get a clap between scenes. But I think last night, I think the actors performed better off of the audience.
Nick Rich has kindly sent in another email. So, Nick, thank you very much. We note that the full stop key on your keyboard still isn't working, so we need you to get that fixed. But anyway, you say, the latest podcast was good as usual. I didn't agree with the guy from Canada's remarks about Jones and Cheeseman, though. Cheeseman's best story was Turkey Dinner, where he came into his own. Now, Branded, the focus of this story was Godfrey and his conscientious objecting. In truth, Godfrey is the hero of the platoon, as he got the military medal, which I think is only one down from a Victoria Cross. It's comedy and tears here. You see a nasty side of Mannering and Fraser, and it was a chance to show what a fine actor Arnold Ridley was. I like this one, James. 5 out of 5. All the best to you and Tony from Nick. Thank you, Nick.
Yeah, wonderful comments, Nick, there. Thanks very much for taking the time to send in your comments, and you'll get to hear what Tony and I think of Branded very shortly. Just before we get into our conversation about Branded, we've received an email from Katie Darby telling us what she thinks about that particular episode. Hi guys, just like to give my opinions on what I think is one of the best earlier Dad's Army episodes. I think this episode is special because some of the characters change roles in a way. For example, Mannering is not seen as the main man in this episode. And that's true. It's obviously all centred around Private Godfrey. But what I find interesting is not just the fact that it's centred around Godfrey, it's everyone else's reaction to the revelation that he has been a conscientious objector. Anyway, Katie continues, I love the way that Mannering has to humble himself at the end. Love the smokehouse scene, a mixture of classic entertainment, especially with a Let Us Pray classic. That was from Walker, I think. And also a mixture of seriousness where Godfrey rescues Mannering. Also, this episode was filmed on Friday the 14th of November 1969 and released just 6 days later. Well, that's the kind of turnaround time they used to work to all those years ago. Katie finishes off by saying, love the podcast and keep up the good work. Thanks ever so much for your comments, Katie. They're very much appreciated.
That started. Things were so desperate. I thought it'd be different to last time.
Well, things are still desperate, Godfrey. Nazis could invade us at any moment. We need every man we can lay our hands on. What do you mean, different from last time?
The last war, sir. You see, I was a conscientious objector.
Oh, I see. Yeah. You were what?
A conscientious objector.
You mean you didn't want to fight?
Well, not really, sir.
Well, I can't believe this, Godfrey. I just can't believe it. I think we'd better go home.
Very good, sir. That was a clip from Branded, Series 3 episode, and this is our much-delayed discussion about this episode. We originally intended to put it on a podcast at the end of January, I think, and it's now the end of March.
I wrote some notes on this at one point, and because of the delay, I actually lost them and I had to redo them. Anyway, this episode was first transmitted in 1969, so before either of us were born, this episode existed. We've got 6 scenes. And I don't often split the episodes into scenes and see, but it does actually help to see how the episode is made up. So our first scene is the usual church hall scene.
It is, but there is one major difference between this church hall scene and the normal church hall scene.
No, don't know yet.
Well, Manorin's not there to start with. And there's at least 5, I think it's about 5, maybe 4.5 minutes to start with, before Manorin makes an appearance. And one, that's unusual just because Manorin is generally seen as the main character. And secondly, it's unusual because it's Wilson taking the lineup. I think that works very well, and I think Wilson's usual reticence in, or well, perceived reticence, he just doesn't always listen to Manorin. Whereas this time, he's actually, you can see his enthusiasm when he's trying to coordinate the stalking exercise.
I think a favourite part for me is Godfrey saying that he had a rather tiring day waiting at the clinic. And I just think, just how can waiting at a clinic, sitting down waiting, be tiring? And I think there's the humour there.
Oh, I don't know. Have you ever not felt really tired when you've been waiting for a train that's been delayed for an hour?
But, James, as you've already mentioned, Manorin being absent at the start, I think it's an excellent bit where Manorin does enter. And you see him creeping up on Wilson. Manorin creeps up through the platoon as part of the stalking practice. And it's very well done. Manorin pretending that he's the expert at this and failing miserably.
Yeah, you'd have thought he'd have learned by now. Anything he pretends to be an expert at, or, oh, I know about this, he nearly always comes a cropper. And Wilson, again, effortlessly gets one over on him. And, yeah, I agree, that scene always makes me smile. Just moving on from that point, where Fraser's starting to get involved in bossing people around and telling them, you know, how good a stalker he was, where he gets hold of, I think it's Pike, isn't it, where he slaps his face and says, "So they do not get your scent," when he asks why you walk downwind.
The next scene we've got in this episode is in the office. But just a quick question. That office, is it directly connected to the church hall? I imagine they go through one door from the church hall into the office. Is that right?
In terms of the way the set's built, you mean?
The way, in real life, the way it's meant to appear. I mean, I can actually see the office on the TV screen in front of me at the minute, and Wilson's just come through the office door. Has he come straight from the church hall?
Yes.
He has?
Yes, I think they're the same set. I mean, you can see, and again, this is not very good because obviously a podcast is audio and we're now looking at a picture on the screen, but you can see the church hall through the office door there.
Okay. Something recently made me wonder if it was meant to be directly connected or not, and I was trying to imagine the layout of the church hall in my mind for some peculiar reason. Anyway, the next scene is the office scene, and one of my comments about that is Wilson, the character of Wilson, doesn't like to get involved with anything sort of at all sensitive, doesn't like to be involved in sensitive issues or personal issues, and he's always trying to get away from them, and with comments like, "Can I be excused?" or "I need to go?" or things like that. And this office scene here is one of those where Wilson is trying to get away. Mm. And Manorin says, "Don't go, Wilson, I may need you." And that's one particular bit I liked.
Yeah, I think that's actually quite different, again, because they're going to speak about a sensitive issue, which is not usual for Dad's Army. It was mentioned in our audio feedback we received from Dean Williams the last podcast. But this particular episode has got far more dramatic moments in it than usual. And I use the word dramatic instead of comedic, really, because it's not played exclusively for laughs. And I think the scene you're talking about now in the office is the start of the serious conversations that they have. I mean, right at the very beginning of it, Wilson starts talking to Godfrey about shortages. It gets completely off the point, and I suppose the fact that the tangent is there is funny anyway.
All those terrible little fluffy bits of tea floating about the top.
That's it, yeah. And they sit there and talk like a couple of old women, really.
And this is, so Wilson and Godfrey, and then Manorin, obviously, loses patience with that, as usual.
And tries to bring the conversation back to the point, which is the fact that Godfrey has sent a letter in resigning from the platoon. But I think it's interesting, because the minute Godfrey mentions he's a conscientious objector, it's the closest, I think, the series gets to dealing with almost a prejudice, because Mannerin's attitude towards conscientious objecting is completely one-dimensional and probably very typical of most soldiers during the Second World War. They always saw conscientious objectors as damned conscientious and cowards. But he didn't demonstrate any understanding whatsoever until it's forced upon him a lot later in the programme.
He says, it isn't normal.
That's right.
And I love that bit, because I'm actually thinking, you took the words out of my mouth, real prejudice there. I'm thinking, well, what is normal then? It isn't normal. Can you imagine a man not wanting to fight? I love it.
But it's even more ironic, because you don't see Mannerin, or the character as Mannerin, as a fighter, even though he often talks about, you know, or I think in one particular episode he talks about instant decapitation, you know, with a cheese grater of some kind. There are times when he's always talking about, I'm turning this group of men into an armed bunch of killers, and yet you can't see Captain Mannerin stabbing someone in the neck or chopping someone's head off in a genuine sense, can you? These lines that Mannerin is given is at odds with the image that you see on the screen. I also think the lines that where Godfrey is coming in for it, I think it takes the audience watching the studio recording by surprise, just as much as it takes the normal audience by surprise, because there's no laughter. And when Mannerin actually says the words, get out, that's harsh. That is quite a harsh thing to say. That's reflected in an email we've received from Ian Sherwood, who's been good enough to send in his comments about this particular episode, which I'll read now. Dear James and Tony, I thought I would email you with my comments on the episode you are reviewing in Podcast 16, Branded. Well, this is Podcast 17, so we were a bit behind there. I could remember this episode, and it was one that I had avoided rewatching, as it had in the past made me feel uncomfortable. Dad's Army and Warmington-on-Sea are such warm, friendly places, and in this episode I could recall feeling that Captain Mannerin was unnecessarily unkind to Mr. Godfrey. How could anyone be so unkind to a lovely old gentleman? And you're quite right, Ian, but that's why it makes the episode so powerful, I think. I should not have worried. I don't recall when I last watched it, but knowing you were going to talk about it made me view it again, and it had some really funny moments. My wife watched it with me, and she did say that it made her feel a bit sad watching Mannerin be so mean to Godfrey, and it does have that edge, but we both laughed many times whilst watching. It was nice to get a chance to see inside Cherry Tree Cottage. If I lived in Warmington, I think I would live there, and to see Godfrey's sister, Sissy. I enjoyed seeing at least two moments of pure fun and enjoyment by the cast members when Private Pike, Ian Lavender, have made the tea and the patrol comes back, Ian laughs into his mug at some comic comment made by another cast member, and when Hodges drags Jones out of the smoke-filled hut by the crutch. Bill Pertwee can hardly stop himself laughing as Jones says something like, don't mess with an old butcher. And I know this is a lot further in the episode than we've got to discussing yet, but it's interesting, there's a couple of references, or Ian's spotted a couple of corpsing moments there in such a serious episode. And Ian rounds off by saying, I also enjoyed a small detail of Fraser saying he got the splinter in his nose, and then in the final scene in Godfrey's bedroom, Fraser had a plaster on his nose, plus the look on Fraser's face when he says he's got a bottle of whiskey for Godfrey, and it's a miniature. The surprise I felt that Fraser should be so generous was soon corrected with his normal mean streak. All in all, it was a laugh, and I enjoyed watching it again. And Ian gives the episode a 2.5, and we won't mention what our scores are yet until we've finished discussing Tony. But thanks very much, Ian, for sending in your comments there. Going back to what we were saying before I read the email out, the office is the first scene where Mannerin is quite openly hostile towards Godfrey.
Very, very principled that he hates conscientious objectors. And yeah, it is quite nasty. Following on from the comments we've heard just there, though, it's not only Mannerin that's being horrible. In the scene where they're in the hut having their tea break, Walker completely blanks, he gives Godfrey a very disappointed look and doesn't say a word. Fraser is just nasty. Jones keeps quiet, and it's basically just Pike that doesn't really understand what's going on.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is a universal rejection of Godfrey, and I think it's done very well, because, again, reflecting what Ian said in his email, it gets you. You think, ugh, this makes me feel a little bit uneasy. But it does reflect, I think, the way conscientious objectors were seen in World War II.
They could go to prison, couldn't they?
I believe so. I don't know whether... Yes, it must have been against the law then. I think certainly in the First World War, people who refused to fight on the basis of conscientious objecting were imprisoned, and they had a very hard time of it in prison as well. So I'm assuming there was some kind of law in place the second time around as well. Yeah. One of the things that happens within the scene that you just described inside the hut there, and again, slightly different dynamic rather than all the platoon being nasty to Godfrey. Did you notice Walker hanging his coat up on the hat rail, or on the coat
rail? That's definitely a blooper, yeah?
No, I don't know if it's a blooper the right word. It's definitely unplanned, certainly, and they just carry on with it.
You sort of see a momentary surprise, I think, in the actors around it, but they all sort of decide to carry on without...
Absolutely. And the audience do laugh at that point as well. So whether or not they're thinking this is just a mistake...
Have we explained that Walker hangs his coat up on a row of pegs... Pegs fall off the wall and collapse.
Yes.
And they just hesitate slightly and they all carry on. We come on to the last but one scene, and that's when they're nearby the smoke-filled hut, and we get Wilson coming out with one of his "do you think that's wise" remarks. I think that's when Mannering's putting more rags into the burner.
Yes, yes, yes.
What else have we got in this scene?
A number of things, I think. There's Hodges giving a lecture. 9 times out of 10 when you see Hodges, or when Hodges features in episodes, he's there just as a protagonist. He's there to annoy Mannering and to set up conflict and perhaps get a bit of comedy. Sometimes Mannering wins, sometimes Hodges wins. This is different because he's giving a lecture. There's actually a level of cooperation between the ARP and the Home Guard, and I think that's good that they've done that. One, to show the slightly different dynamic between the characters, and secondly, because ARP did cooperate with the Home Guard on several occasions during the World War and World War II, and it wasn't just a case of they were always arguing and there weren't always power struggles. And I like the way Hodges gives his lecture as well, because he comes across as quite efficient, apart from when he loses it with Pike when he talks about getting a splinter in his nose. But I like that scene. I think it's good.
You don't know how lucky you are to be allowed to go into a smoke-filled hut.
Yes, and that's Hodges' neurosis getting the better of him, perhaps. But yes, it's Mannering getting it completely wrong with the amount of rags that were in there. Well, he actually comes a cropper, I think, in that scene, which I think is good.
In Ian Sherwood's comments from a minute or so earlier, when Corporal Jones comes out of the hut and he's doing something stupid, we're not quite sure what he's doing, but he decides to go back in. I think he's forgotten his bundle. He's forgotten the bundle.
His straw man, I think.
Straw man.
Yeah, yeah.
And he starts going back in, and Hodges grabs him in and it is the smile on Hodges' face afterwards is brilliant.
Yeah. Jones grabs hold of his hand or something and tells him never to tangle with an old butcher or something along those lines. So it's good to see that Jones sometimes has actually got the experience to cause pain if that's what he wants to do. That was a good little scene there.
We've also got Walker before going into the hut having a smoke and a fag, and as he often does, and Mannering says, put that out, there's no smoking allowed in there. And that's a lovely line, just because it's full of smoke already.
Very silly with Mannering, yeah. As I said, Mannering comes across, I think he comes out of this episode quite badly, because we mentioned earlier the way he reacted with Godfrey was so utterly, completely wrong, as we'll talk about in a second. And also, everything he does, he gets wrong. He puts far too many rags on the boiler. He tells Walker to put the cigarette out when he's going into a smoke-filled hut. There's a number of areas here that Mannering just gets completely and utterly wrong.
You're absolutely right, because most episodes, obviously he gets loads of things wrong anyway, but he usually gets one or two things right.
Mm.
And I think you're right. He does nothing right in this episode.
No, he comes off quite badly.
One thing I did notice, when Walker comes out of the smoke-filled hut, he blows smoke in Hodges' face. This episode is from Series 3, and I just realised that that's been done before, obviously, in The Deadly Attachment, where the German U-boat captain blows smoke in Mannering's face.
That's actually after this episode.
Yeah, though. Series 6. Mm. So the funny one that you remember is the U-boat captain, but they've done it 3 series before.
But of course, the whole episode has got the twist at the end, where it turns out that Godfrey is more than a thoroughly decent old gentleman. He's got absolutely no malice whatsoever towards everyone who's been universally horrible to him. It turns out that he was braver than any of the other soldiers were. So the final scene in hospital, it's not, I thought it was hospital originally, but it's not, is it? This is actually in Godfrey's
bit. Cherry Tree Cottage.
Yes, yes indeed, yeah. Where everybody's eating humble pie, and Godfrey, again, is being just very, very magnanimous and very pleasant to everyone. It's one of these very rare episodes where something changes, because normally with Dad's Army, you don't have anything fundamental that changes the subsequent programmes, whereas this time, Godfrey becomes the medical orderly. And that's a fundamental change, and after this episode, he doesn't carry a rifle. So I think that's notable, because it's so rare. And lastly, all we've got to ask you, Tony, is your score.
4 out of 5. Usually there's bits of episodes that I like and other bits that I think don't work well. This episode is good because it has very few weak patches in it. It's all good, so it's consistent.
No, I would agree. And I think for the things that you've mentioned earlier, it feels like it's got more scenes than a usual episode. Therefore, I think it's paced better. I like the comedy. I think the comedy is original. It's very rare that they try and fall back on standard jokes here. And I like the serious components to it. I think that's excellent as well. And it's done very, very well. Gives the actors a real opportunity to flex their acting talents, or acting muscles, should I say, more than usual. And I also think it was one of the first attempts at trying to be slightly more serious than people have become accustomed to. So I would agree. I would say 4 out of 5 is an F score for this.
Well, that's it for this week. Thanks ever so much for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed the last half an hour or so of irreverent banter about Dad's Army. We'll be back in a fortnight's time, where we'll be featuring a discussion on the Series 1 story, The Enemy Within the Gates. So please feel free to send in your comments. That particular discussion has already been recorded, but I'll be quite happy to include listeners' comments into different parts of the podcast. So if you've got any comments on that particular episode or anything else related to Dad's Army, or indeed the podcast, then please, please do get in contact with us. Email address is james@dadsarmypodcast.com. Also remember to check out our blog, where you can keep up to date with all of the Dad's Army goings on at www.dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com. And I very much look forward to speaking to you again in a couple of weeks' time. Good evening, Tony. How are you doing?
Hello, James. All is well, thank you very much.
Wonderful.
You okay?
I'm absolutely wonderful at this moment in time. No complaints that I can think of, but I shall think about it and see if I can work on it. Anyway, coming up in the next few... That was a bit crap, wasn't it?
James, I'm sitting here and I'm just shaking my head.